I'm Gabe Ortiz, afternoon host at WIPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make the live streams like this one more difficult to maintain. Stand up for public media and help fortify WIPR's future. Find out more and donate at WIPR.org. Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Hope you had a good weekend. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. It's a tough time for tech. Tens of thousands of tech workers have been laid off in the last few years, but tech companies are still advertising for workers, and they're placing those ads in a most unlikely place, print newspapers. ProPublica investigative reporter Alec McGillis looked into this for an excellent story that was posted last week. Alec is based here in Baltimore. He's the author of two books, The Cynic, a 2014 biography of Senator Mitch McConnell, and Fulfillment, America in the Shadow of Amazon. And he joins me today in Studio B. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Tom.
So let's talk about the situation for tech workers, software engineers, that kind of thing. I was talking to a young woman who's about to enter her final year at NYU. And I asked her, you know, what her friends who were graduating were facing. And she said, it's really bad to be a programmer right now because none of those folks are getting any jobs. AI is having a huge effect there. But give us a sense of the landscape for tech workers.
Yeah, it's not pretty out there. Just a few years ago, the saying was that everyone should just learn how to code, and then your future would be guaranteed. That's what they were, telling the unemployed coal miners in Appalachia, just learn how to code. And here we are just a few years later, and it looks much different. The unemployment rate for recent CompSci graduates is quite high, higher than in other fields, even higher than in the humanities. And you have all these new challenges. You have the challenge of AI. You have the challenge that's always been present of outsourcing to overseas, places like India, for this work. And then you have the challenge that I described in this article, which is the competitive threat that is posed by foreign temporary workers here in this country who are on average paid less in many cases and who do not have much leverage with their employers and therefore are quite attractive alternatives to recent college graduates. On top of that, you have had all these layoffs from a lot of the big tech companies in the last few years. And so you had the labor market kind of flooded with those folks as well. So it really is a tough landscape in this realm.
And the tech companies are also, working in the same context that all American companies are working in, which is a very hostile attitude towards immigration of all sorts, legal, illegal, et cetera. The Trump administration is doing everything it can to have very few people enter the country, only from very specific places. The tech companies have figured out a kind of a workaround here. Explain what the PERM system is. It means, it's an acronym, PERM. It means Program Electronic Review Management. But it is related to people receiving eventually permanent resident status too.
That's right. This is something I just stumbled on a few months ago, and I was really quite kind of stunned by what I learned. We have, in this country, we have people on H-1B visas. These are visas that are there for skilled people from overseas who come here, supposed to be temporary. They come here to do temporary work, and there are now about 120,000 H-1B visas given out every year for this skilled labor, temporary skilled labor. 75% of them are now from India. And
75%,
three-quarters,
wow,
are from India. And wow, and the vast majority are working in tech. And after five, you can only have the H-1B visa. You're supposed to only have it for 5 or 6 years. It's because it's supposed to be temporary. After 5 or 6 years, your employer can sponsor you to become a permanent resident to get a green card. The way this works is very unusual. This is what I didn't know until I started looking into it, and it's really quite almost darkly comic. It is at this point in the process that employers need to prove that there are no Americans, citizens, or permanent residents here in this country who can do the work instead. This seems kind of backwards because they already have the person working for them, this temporary worker on the H-1B working for them, who they want to keep. But they have to go through the motions at this point in the game of proving that there's not someone else who can do the job.
And this is a specific kind of visa, we should remind folks. H-1B, for example, every year around this time, the Maryland congressional delegation gets involved in asking the administration to increase the number of H-2B visas, because those are folks, for example, who pick crab meat.
Seasonal
agricultural workers.
Right.
But H-1B visas are for specific, they're for highly skilled workers and highly educated workers.
Yes. The requirement is that you have to have a bachelor's degree and you have to be paid over a certain level, though it's a pretty low threshold now. And so at the point where the employer has to prove that there's not someone else who can do this job, that's the point where they, by the rules of the U.S. Labor Department, they have to prove that they looked for someone else to do the job is that they have to put an ad in the newspaper, in a print newspaper, in the place, in the location of this job in question, for two successive Sundays. And so every week, in the metro newspapers all around the country, you have these tech job listings that are quite lengthy. It looks like there's all these jobs available to tech workers. They go on for column after column of these jobs. And it's basically, at this point, some of the only jobs listed still in the print classifieds in newspapers are these tech jobs. Well, in fact, most of these jobs are not open. These are jobs that have been placed there by the employer only to show that they, quote, try to look for someone else. They're going through the motions. It is a total charade. So I had some fun, and I decided to take these classifieds. I took the Washington Post classifieds for several weeks in a row, and I just went out to these places in Northern Virginia.
You went to the addresses, of the places that were placing the ads.
Yes.
And the irony of a tech company, any tech company, placing a classified ad in a newspaper, a print newspaper,
exactly,
is incredible.
It's
the tech business, the Facebooks and the Googles of the universe, that basically put print newspapers out of business by destroying their classified ads.
That's right.
Business.
In some of these cities, when I would go and try to do this in other places, I did it also in Columbus, Ohio, and St. Louis. I had trouble even finding the newspaper in these places so that I could go out and look for these companies. It's so hard to find the newspaper now. In one of the biggest hubs for these jobs is Northern New Jersey, and that is where a vast share of these H-1B Indian tech workers with H-1Bs live, up in Northern New Jersey. Well, the New York Star-Ledger, the largest newspaper in New Jersey, stopped publishing at all, print newspaper at all, just a few months ago. So yes, the irony is very stark.
How is it? Let me reintroduce you. This is Alec McGillis. He's a investigative reporter for ProPublica. We're talking about a really terrific piece that he wrote that was posted last week on the ProPublica site. It's called "The Tech Recruitment Ruse That Has Avoided Trump's Crackdown on Immigration." It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you have a question or comment, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. So I guess the way it came to be that these newspaper ads satisfy the requirement of the federal legislation dates back to the Immigration Act of 1990, which in 1990, newspaper ads made sense. It was before the internet overtook them.
That's right. And there was also when they passed that big law in 1990, they failed to anticipate really what was going to happen as a result of the law. The key thing in that law was that for the first time, they made it very easy for people on temporary work visas, H-1B visas, to apply for permanent residency. Before that, it had been hard to do that. And so what you ended up with, and what we still have now, 35 years later, is this real mess, actually. It's a real huge backlog where you have all these H-1B people who came on H-1B visas who ran out of their 5 or 6 years on the H-1B, want to stay as permanent residents, and then apply through this process to get their green card. Most people get certified, get approved for the green card through this newspaper ad charade. It's almost like, you know, just kind of automatic. But the way the law is set up in this country, only a certain number of people from any one country can get green cards in a given year. It's supposed to, the cap is 7%, roughly 7%. So that means you have all these people coming through an H-1B.
So it's highly competitive.
Yes, but the problem is that the H-1B program does not have any similar cap. As I said before, three quarters of people on H-1Bs are now Indians from India. But so they are making up the vast part of this pipeline. At the other end of the pipeline, only a certain number of these Indians on H-1B visas can get green cards in a given year. So what you've ended up with is this huge backlog of Indian tech workers who are allowed to stay on extended H-1Bs while they're waiting for their actual green cards, but it's now taking them 10, 12, might be as long as 15 years for them now to actually get that green card. So during that interim period, they're in this limbo where they're allowed to be here on that temporary visa that's now been extended to more than a decade, but they are very beholden to their employer. It's hard for them to change employers.
Yeah, this sets up the opportunity for the employer to exploit them.
Exactly.
Right? In other words, pay them less than they would pay an American worker.
Make them work to overwork them.
And they can't switch jobs either.
It's very hard for them to switch jobs. They are truly in a sort of indentured status. And it's not good for them. And it's also, of course, not good for the domestic tech worker who is competing against these workers on these extended temporary visas, who are on average, you know, in a sense, forced to work for less.
Alec McGillis is an investigative reporter for ProPublica. We're talking about immigration and the immigration loopholes that tech companies are finding to get around the Trump administration's crackdown on immigration. And Alec, when the law was passed, the intent of the law, as you report, was to limit immigration. These are supposed to be temporary visas, and they were supposed to make up for the fact that the homegrown people in these industries, that workforce was inadequate. Is that workforce still inadequate? If there were no foreign workers, none of these people from India working in the tech sector, would there be a vast shortage of tech workers the way there's a shortage of nurses and bus drivers and some of the other occupations we've heard about?
Yes. The argument in favor of the H-1B program is, and it's an argument that Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy made again last fall when this issue came up briefly, is that you know, the American tech workers are not qualified to do this work. So we have to go and get these best and brightest from overseas. There are a couple problems with that argument. One is that the notion that this program is bringing in the best and brightest is somewhat dubious, given that the only requirement is that these temporary workers have a bachelor's degree. Some of them, and many of them are coming from, you know, very modest, rudimentary tech schools in India or schools here in America, where they're going to school right side by side with American students. The H-1B visas are handed out by lottery. There's no attempt to discriminate and find the absolute, you know, the Albert Einstein sort of in that are out there that we want to bring into this country. Much of the work that they're doing here is fairly rudimentary rank and file kind of tech work doing, you know, contract work, outsourced contract tech work for various companies or government agencies. The notion that this is sort of a sort of best and brightest kind of thing is, you know, doesn't really hold up to the facts. Then there's also the fact that we now have this high unemployment rate for recent American comp sci graduates. All these folks have been laid off. There are plenty of people out there who want to do this work and are having trouble getting these jobs.
I remember years ago, Tom Friedman in the New York Times wrote an essay that said, when we give out PhDs to foreign students, particularly in the STEM fields, we should hand them an H-1B visa along with the the diploma, so that we just keep these foreign workers in the United States. We keep the brain trust in the United States. Now, these are PhDs he was talking about. These are not bachelor degrees, and there are people getting the PhDs from, you know, all the some very, very good schools in the United States. Do they go through the same kind of process if they don't have a, you know, sort of low-level programming job with a contract company? Would a PhD in computer science from Stanford have the same problem getting getting a green card?
There are other programs that the H-1B is the biggest one, but there are now other rapidly growing visa programs for more exceptional graduates and tech industry folks that that are now available as well. But H-1B is the big one, and there are absolutely arguments to be made on both sides of this issue. What is striking is how little scrutiny this whole realm of the immigrant workforce has gotten in comparison with all the attention that's been paid to lower skilled workers working, you know, in slaughterhouses or in home building and all these other industries, the Home Depot, you know, the guys who were just picked up at the Home Depot parking lot in LA over the weekend, you know, that helped spark what's happening out there. That sort of lower skilled realm of the immigrant workforce world has gotten so much more attention, and it's really striking how little the Trump administration has so far been willing to sort of look at this particular aspect of what's happening, which even though it is in its own way also undermining American workers.
There was a report back in 1996 that you write about that said that there had been more than 136,000 applicants for 18,000 perm openings, and only 104 people were hired from these advertisements. That's like 1%.
Exactly. Essentially, nobody has been hired from all these ads that were placed in the paper. So people who have tried to believe in these ads and have applied for them have almost none of them have ever been hired. And that's why it's fair to call it a charade. And that's what I found when I was going to all these different offices. People just looked at me like I was crazy when I came to ask about the ads.
You've actually responded to the ad and they looked at you like you were nuts.
Right. What are you doing here? Don't you realize that these are essentially fake?
These are fake. Yeah.
Yes.
You say that in your deep reporting on this that you searched in vain for defenders of the process. Is this all part of the, you know, the trope we hear all the time now? We are in need of comprehensive immigration reform. Is this just one piece of the puzzle? Because it seems like it's a pretty important piece.
It's a very important piece of the puzzle. Yes, but it is it's hard to take it on just on its own. It would ideally be part of a more sweeping reform of the entire system. You know, that's of course what was being attempted in President Obama's second term. There was that window where they almost did manage to pass comprehensive immigration reform. This would have been part of that, and it fell apart in the end. But this is a very key part of the picture that absolutely needs to be looked at. Really, everyone involved in the system knows that it's a joke. There was a notorious video. It's worth looking up, and I have it linked in my article, an astonishing video from 2007 where an immigration attorney is at a conference telling his colleagues how to negotiate this whole system. And he just bluntly says, our goal when we're putting out these ads is to not find someone. To not get someone to apply for them, and just laid it out in very blunt, cynical terms. But that is what's happening here.
Yeah, if you want to not do something, chances are you take out a classified ad.
Right, exactly.
You know? I mean, if you had a blender to sell, you wouldn't sell it in a classified ad. You know, there are very few classified ads and very few print newspapers. But the scope of this problem, that you report is really amazing. You say that there's probably more than 1 million. People awaiting green cards, most of them, again, from India.
Yes.
Because they've come under this ruse.
Yes. It's a whole new I think it almost was a realm a community, in a sense, of these mostly Indian tech workers who came over on the H-1B visa, and something that was supposed to be temporary, are now here still on that temporary visa for more than a decade. They're raising families. They live in our communities. They're paying taxes, but they are in this real sort of netherworld, this limbo where they don't have the rights that would come with a green card. They are very beholden to their employer, and because of that, they are indirectly really sort of undermining the economic standing of the American tech worker.
And as we have seen ever since Mr. Trump was inaugurated, being employed, paying taxes, being part of the community is certainly no shield against being picked up by ICE agents and deported.
No, but so far that has not. They have been this whole.
For the H-1B visa holders, they've been protected at the moment.
They've been protected at the moment.
But who knows how long that'll last. Before we let you go, I want to switch topics and talk about the Baltimore Banner. You've been working with the Baltimore Banner as a kind of a, what I describe you as a writing coach?
Or a volunteer editor.
Yeah. Kimi Yoshino, who's going to be on the program with me in a couple of weeks, has made the decision to leave the Banner as its executive editor or editor-in-chief and go to the Washington Post. What will that mean for a newsroom that you know very well?
It's a big loss. Kimmy's amazing. She has been a huge part of the Banner's success in these first 3 years. And it's just been incredible I've been there from the start and to see the Banner grow as it has into what is really, I'm not sure a lot of people here in Baltimore realize, this is the largest nonprofit journalism startup in the country by far. For a mid-sized city like this,
and it's now the largest newsroom in the state.
Yes,
in terms of numbers of reporters,
there are more than 100 people working there. When I go there, once a week, there's a full newsroom of people. It's wonderful, and we're so fortunate to have it here in town. And Kimmy's been a huge part of its success, and just has such respect in the newsroom, and just a great leader and great judgment. So it's a big loss. And it's a great gain for the Washington Post. But my hope is that given how many amazing people are now at the Banner, many of which she helped bring there, there are plenty of people to carry the work forward. And given how much profile the Banner's now gotten with these amazing stories they've done, just winning
and
Pulitzer.
Won a Pulitzer Prize just a month ago.
And just a whole lot of other amazing stories as well. And so people around the country know how strong an organization it is, and that's going to help them draw great candidates to replace her.
Well, Kimi Yoshino will be on the show with me here on Midday, along with Margaret Sullivan, who is a former ombudsman for the New York Times, the Washington Post. She's currently a columnist for the Guardian newspaper, and she heads up the investigative journalism department at Columbia University in the School of Journalism. And we'll talk about Kimi's work at the Banner, and as you say, she's just so highly respected and liked. I mean, the people at the Banner just love working with her and working for her. But we'll talk about the future of independent journalism. We'll talk about not the nonprofit model that the Baltimore Banner represents. It's certainly something a lot about because you've been working with ProPublica for a long time. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in, Alec. I'm really grateful. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you, Tom.
Alec McGillis is an investigative reporter for ProPublica. His story is called The Tech Recruitment Ruse That Has Avoided Trump's Crackdown on Immigration, and it's available on the ProPublica website. And up next, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra is concluding their current season with a grand opera. We'll hear about it on the other side of a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.